At this time, we present an address by R.J. Thomas, President of the International Union of the United Automobile Workers of America. Mr. Thomas is to discuss tonight the policies of his organization in regard to national defense under the heading, What Labor Seeks. Mr. Thomas.
Good evening, fellow Americans. I appreciate the opportunity given me by the Columbia Broadcasting System to speak to you tonight on the theme, What Labor Seeks, the aspirations and practical program of American labor, I think can be best illustrated by specific instances. What are labor's grievances, and what does labor propose? I should like to answer these questions in the terms of our controversy today with the Ford Motor Company. 20 years ago, Henry Ford was hailed, and not by his press agents alone, as the ideal American employer. That impression continued for many years. It persists today in many quarters. Yet no large-scale employer of labor is today beset with as many labor difficulties as confront the Ford Motor Company. Virtually the entire automobile industry, including General Motors and Chrysler, are operating under collective agreements with a labor union, the organization of which I am president. United States Steel, for decades, the traditional fortress of the open shop, the Akron Rubber Corporations, Chicago Packers, and even the owners of the once bloody Harlan County mines, all these and many others have recognized the right of labor to bargain through its unions. But the Ford Motor Company, once hailed as our most enlightened employer, is a holdout. Ford is today involved in more than half a dozen cases which have brought forth the condemnation of the National Labor Relations Board, and in one leading case of our federal courts. Ford employees complain of low wages, of speed up, of espionage, and of insecure employment. They have currently been brought to the desperate position where, all other means having failed, they have filed notice of intention to strike the Ford plants in Dearborn, Detroit, and Highland Park. What are the substance of the Ford workers' grievances? Let me take first the issue of wages. Ford's wage policies are surrounded by more mice accidentally or deliberately inspired than any other phase of this company's labor policies. It is true that back in 1914, the Ford Motor Company set wage standards at $5 a day. It is less well known that only deserving employees, those certified by Ford's sociological department, receive this wage. It is also not generally known that Ford's wage policy was induced by a desire to keep his workers from being snared by other auto manufacturers. Nevertheless, Ford was the first to pay $5 a day, and he has received due recognition for it. All too great recognition, we feel, when the facts of today, as contrasted with those of 1914, are known. Ford today pays lower wages than any major automobile corporation. The facts speak for themselves. In January 1939, Ford Motor Company, through paid advertisements, made one of its rare public statements on its wage rates. It stated then that its average wage was $7.25 a day, or 90 cents an hour. There has been no change in the wage structure at Ford's since January 1939. Ford still pays an average of 90 cents an hour. By contrast, according to the official records of the United States Department of Labor, the average hourly wage in the entire automotive industry is a little over 95 cents an hour, 5 cents better than Ford. Nor is that the entire story. General Motors and Chrysler, direct competitors of the Ford Motor Company, today pay their workers an average of over a dollar an hour. Ford pays at least 10 cents an hour less than GM and Chrysler. These wage rates may seem unusually high. However, it must be kept in mind that the automobile industry is seasonal and has never yet afforded its workers year-round employment. These are the facts of the basic economic grievance of the Ford workers. There are matters which American workers, free men, born with the guarantees of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, value as highly as they do wage rates. There is the right to join a labor union, the right to give a day's work without the pressure of spies, the right to expect an amount of security on his job. None of these things are true of the mass of the Ford workers. There is no seniority system at Ford's. The years a man may work is no guarantee that he will be called back after a layoff period. There is no recognized democratic grievance machinery by which a Ford worker may lodge a kick with the company and, if his complaint is justified, win redress. There is no machinery for discussing the speed-up which overtaxes men's strength and makes them old at 40. The Ford workers make the charge that there is no American freedom in a Ford plant, that they must work continually under the surveillance of servicemen and company spies whose tactics range all the way from intimidation to violence and discharge. These charges have been substantiated a hundredfold by the mass of evidence which the National Labor Relations Board has taken from men under oath. In the Ford plant at Dallas, there was what became known as a pickle jar. Each worker, as he left the plant on certain paydays, was asked to drop some change into the jar. The findings of a labor board examiner declared that the proceeds of the pickle jar collection in the Ford Dallas plant went to help finance a strong-arm squad maintained by the management. These were the findings of the government's examiner. The strong-arm squad, comprising some 15 or 16 Ford employees, went through the highways of Dallas into its homes and taverns on the hunt for CIO organizers or sympathizers, captained by Fats Perry, who has since confessed his role, and Warren A. Worley, who had been sent to Dallas from Dearborn, Michigan. The squad kidnapped and tarred and feathered Herbert Harris, an organizer for the Textile Workers Organizing Committee. The squad beat up Baron DeLouis, an organizer for the Auto Workers Union. It pulled George W. Chandler, a CIO organizer, out of a car and then proceeded to kick and beat him into a state of semi-insensibility. The squad prevailed on one anti-CIO Ford employee to invite some CIO sympathizers to his home and then beat up the invited guests. The squad attacked and beat up W.J. Houston, Dallas attorney for the CIO. It kidnapped and beat up George Bear, organizer for the Hatters Union, so that he lost several teeth and the sight of one eye. It tapped the wires of CIO attorney Houston and of CIO headquarters. It attacked O.C. Phillips, a General Motors worker whose car bore a sign joined the CIO. It gave Charles D. Elliott, another visitor to Dallas and a member of the CIO in Kansas City, 50 lashes with a whip. Those are some of the things charged against Ford in Dallas. The NLRB examiner, Mr. Robert N. Denham, was moved in his official findings to state, I quote, "No case within the history of the board is known to the undersigned in which an employer has deliberately planned and carried into execution a program of brutal beatings, whippings, and other manifestations of physical violence comparable to that shown by the uncontradicted and wholly credible evidence on which the findings are based." End of quote. The decisions of the labor board and his examiners in Dallas were not isolated instances. In Dearborn, at the Ford Rouge plant, the company was held responsible for a violent attack on CIO organizers and members. It was found to have unfairly discharged 23 CIO members and to have carried on a widespread campaign of intimidation to deprive the 80,000 Rouge workers of their right to join a union. The labor board found that in St. Louis, the Ford company had campaigned to crush the CIO and had fired 94 employees who had joined the union. Espionage and discriminatory discharge were found to be the case in the Ford Buffalo plant. In two California cases, the company was found to have unfairly discharged more than 1,000 CIO members. In Kansas City, the Ford workers have likewise been deprived of their legal right to join and bargain through a union of their own choosing. These are the main outlines of some of the labor board findings with regard to Henry Ford's labor policies. That, in brief, is labor's bill of indictment against Henry Ford and his company. What does labor propose to correct these intolerable situations? We propose simply that the Ford Motor Company give complete and immediate compliance to the provisions of the National Labor Relations Act. We propose that all violence and firings because of union activities cease. We propose that the labor board conduct a secret election to determine whether the Ford workers desire to be represented by the CIO. And we propose, if our organization receives a majority of the votes, that the Ford company sit down and negotiate a fair and equitable agreement on wage rates and working conditions. We ask that in the meantime, the Ford Motor Company shall not receive the benefit of government defense contracts until it complies with these plain and modest mandates of our federal laws. More than 700 automobile companies employing better than 450,000 workers are today doing these things under contract with the UAW CIO. In fairness to these companies and these employees, Ford must no longer be permitted to be an exception which endangers the standards of all. We ask simply that the Ford Motor Company obey the law. As a result of the intolerable grievances which I have cited and of the failure of the Ford Motor Company to comply with the decisions of the labor board, some 90,000 Ford workers in and near Detroit are preparing to strike. Neither they nor the officers of the union desire a strike. We have notified the federal and state governments that we would welcome a solution of our problems without a strike. However, should the Ford Motor Company reject our offers of conciliation, we shall strike. If such a conflict comes, we ask the understanding and support of the fair-minded American public. We urge that you not be influenced by hysterical anti-labor propaganda, nor by false pretensions of patriotism. We believe that the Ford labor policies destroy goodwill in industry and as such menace our national defense program. The Ford workers are American workers who have suffered long and patiently from grievous wrongs. In their name, I ask your support for the redress of those wrongs to the end, that the Ford workers may enjoy the rights of working men and citizens of a free republic. Thank you and good night.
You have just heard an address by R.J. Thomas, President of the International Union of the United Automobile Workers of America. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.